Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today, you'll hear Seth's chat with the Democratic National Committee Chairman, Tom Perez, who also takes a few more questions backstage just for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
And the evidence continues to mount that President Trump actively tried to obstruct justice in the Russia investigation, but even as Trump's scandals pile up, he's still capable of doing immense damage, as we saw when Trump released his first full budget yesterday. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Trump has been on his 9-day trip to Europe and the Middle East, and on Wednesday, he stopped by the Vatican to completely bum out the Pope. Look at this picture. The Pope may be Catholic, but that face is saying, "Oi, gewalt, what a schmuck!" But even when Trump's out of the country, he can't seem to escape the ongoing Russia investigation. In fact, things have gotten so bad, Trump is now starting to lawyer up.
Breaking tonight, CNN confirms that President Trump is expected to hire a personal lawyer outside of his White House legal team to represent him in the Russia investigation.
That's right. Trump hired a personal lawyer. And based on how much cable TV he watches, I wouldn't be surprised if he went with Celino and Barnes.
What? They're not together anymore? Fine. Get me suits.
In particular, we keep getting more and more evidence that Trump actively tried to obstruct justice in the Russia investigation. Remember, first, it was reported that he asked FBI Director James Comey for a loyalty pledge as if he were Don Corleone, when in fact, he's dumb Corleone.
I'll make him an offer he can't accept.
Comey refused that and also refused to drop his investigation into Michael Flynn, so Trump fired him. And on Monday, we learned that Comey wasn't the only high-ranking official that Trump tried to influence.
Another bombshell report in the Washington Post. President Trump asked two of the nation's top intelligence officials in March to help him push back against an FBI investigation into possible coordination between his campaign and the Russian government. Trump made separate appeals to the Director of National Intelligence, Daniel Coats, and to Admiral Michael S. Rogers, the Director of the National Security Agency, urging them to publicly deny the existence of any evidence of collusion.
Now, we know about Trump's interactions with Comey because Comey wrote detailed memos about all of his conversations with the president. So how do we know about this latest interaction between Trump and the NSA director, Mike Rogers? Well, once again, according to the Washington Post, Trump's conversation with Rogers was documented in an internal memo. Trump is so crazy, every time he leaves the room, people go, "Damn, I gotta write this down." Of course, Trump doesn't write anything down. He can barely write his own name. Look at his signature. Looks like a failed polygraph test. Even Trump's own hand knows when he's lying.
Mexico will pay for the wall.
But here's the thing about all this. It is tempting to get excited that Trump is under investigation, that some lawmakers are openly talking about impeachment, and that his approval numbers are low. And all those things are important and true, but even if somehow there is eventually an impeachment and Trump is removed from office, that would take months, possibly even years. And while he's still here, he and Republicans in Congress can do significant damage. Just yesterday, for example, the Trump White House unveiled its budget proposal for next year with the title New Foundation for American Greatness. And as a general rule, you should trust a thing less the longer its name is. For example, if you were sick, would you rather take penicillin or a handful of Dr. Wickersham's Miracle Fizz pills? We'll figure it out, because the cruelty of this budget is going to make you sick.
The U.S. is facing some of the steepest budget cuts in history if approved by Congress.
The White House is looking to cut $1.7 trillion out of the social safety net.
There are cuts made to the food stamp program, CHIP, the children's health insurance program.
Critics are calling this the reverse Robin Hood budget because it takes from the poor and gives to the rich.
This is only a taxpayer-first budget if you're in the top 1% income earners. If you're one of the wealthiest American families, you do great. In fact, under this proposal, you get a tax break. Everybody else gets whacked under this budget.
That's right. You're going to get whacked by dumb Corleone.
Tonight, you sleep with a fish. Actually, bosses sleep with the fishes. You know, we throw them in the river. We're not going to have them make sex with the fish? Okay. Seems like that's worse.
Now, it's true that a president's proposed budget is essentially just a wish list that will be changed by Congress, but still, what someone wishes for tells you a lot about that person. If a 7-year-old blows out his birthday candles and then looks around and says, "Where are the strippers and cocaine?" you're gonna know Billy might have some issues. And in this case, Trump is wishing for some truly savage cuts to Social Security and Medicaid in particular. The budget would cut Social Security disability insurance by $72 billion, along with $610 billion in Medicaid cuts, on top of an $880 billion Medicaid cut already in the Republican health care bill. In total, Trump's budget would cut Medicaid spending nearly in half. What's especially infuriating about this is that Trump went out of his way repeatedly during the campaign to distance himself from traditional GOP policies and promise his voters that he would not, under any circumstances, cut Social Security or Medicaid.
I'm not going to cut Social Security like every other Republican, and I'm not going to cut Medicare or Medicaid.
I am going to protect and save your Social Security.
On May 7, 2015, he tweeted, "I was the first and only potential GOP candidate to state that there will be no cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Huckabee copied me."
I love that Trump's biggest concern was that somebody copied him.
Huckabee copied me, and also James has been passing very mean notes. Guy writes everything down.
This budget lays bare just how much of a fraud Trump's campaign was. It goes back on virtually everything he promised to the people who voted for him. It also cuts safety net programs like food stamps, which would have devastating consequences, especially for people living in states that voted overwhelmingly for Trump.
How's this going to hit politically?
Trump supporters.
If you look only, for example, at SNAP, the former food stamps program, a majority of those receiving benefits under the program today in all of the five Western states that tipped the election, Iowa, Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, are non-college whites. And those are the voters at the very core of the Trump coalition.
I think the person who would have hated this budget the most is perhaps Donald Trump, the candidate.
That's right. Donald Trump, the candidate, would hate Donald Trump, the president. And you know, it's a shame those two never met. I can only imagine the things candidate Trump would have to say about President Trump.
We have a president that can't get anybody to do anything, so he signs, you know, executive orders.
We can't have someone in the Oval Office who doesn't understand the meaning of the word confidential or classified. This is collusion and corruption of the highest order, and the world is laughing at us. They're laughing at the stupidity of our president.
Okay, you know what? All right, maybe it's better those two don't ever meet, because I gotta be honest, I think they would hate each other. Now, how did Trump go from promising to protect Medicaid to cutting it in half? Well, rather than stand by his campaign promises, he deferred mostly to his budget director, Mick Mulvaney, a former Tea Party member of Congress and hardline conservative who, unlike candidate Trump, has openly called for drastically reducing the size of the federal government. In fact, when Mulvaney unveiled the budget on Tuesday, he argued that using taxpayer dollars to help poor and working people wasn't compassionate. It was akin to a crime.
We looked at this budget through the eyes of the people who were actually paying the bills. If I take money from you and I have no intention of ever giving it back. That is not debt. That is theft.
Yes, theft is one word for it. Another is Trump University. That also works. And if you're a Trump voter and you took his promises on Social Security and Medicare seriously, you essentially voted for the opposite of what Mulvaney wants. And yet Mulvaney, rather than Trump, seems to be making the decisions about what to cut, as a Wall Street Journal reporter explained yesterday.
He took basically the equivalent of a yellow legal pad with a bunch of proposed cuts into the Oval Office, would show them to Trump, and Trump, like, went through them one by one and said, yes, no, yes, no.
Which is the same way Trump decides which of his children get Christmas gifts.
Yes, no, yes, no!
So the Trump budget proposes trillions in cuts to programs that poor and working people rely on to pay for military spending increases and giant tax cuts. And on top of all that, it doesn't even balance the budget. The Trump administration claims that it does, but that claim is based, and this is true, on a math error, and not a small one either.
They're assuming 3% growth for this budget, and that's going to pay for getting their budget to balance. But they assumed already that they were going to get that economic growth and that that's what was going to pay for their tax cut. So they're double counting.
Yes.
What that growth will be. They seem to have just made a basic math error, and that math error adds up to something like $2 trillion.
They made a $2 trillion math error. I have a feeling math errors are what caused Trump to go bankrupt four times.
That was a great dinner, not to leave a tip. Let's see, it was $200, 20%. That's $9 million.
I'm just kidding. He never left his hip. Important and unnerving as the Russia investigation is, we can't lose sight of the damage Trump can still do as president. This budget is not only cruel, it's delusional. It would eviscerate safety net programs that poor and working people rely on just to fund tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans. If this budget passes, the top 1% is going to look like this, while everyone else is going to look like this. This has been A Closer Look.
Hi, this is Fred Armisen, the music director of the HG Band. Did you know that Late Night with Seth Meyers has a podcast now? That's what this is. And it's released every Wednesday and Friday. Tell your friends who love Late Night that they should subscribe at iTunes.com/LateNightSeth. You'll find it. What I just said, you'll be able to find it. I believe in you.
Our guest served as Labor Secretary under President Obama. He is currently the chairman of the Democratic National Committee. Please welcome to the show, Tom Perez. Welcome. Thank you for making the time.
Oh, it's an honor to be with you.
This is an interesting time to have you. The Congressional Budget Office scored the Republican health care bill today after they made some very small changes, and it went from 24 million uninsured to 23 million uninsured. Progress. How do you get this message out to voters that are not Democratic voters that this is a health care plan that is not doing them any favors?
Well, let's be honest. This bill is an unmitigated disaster. In order to provide $600 billion of tax relief to the wealthy, not only are 23 million people going to lose their coverage, but millions of other folks, if you have a pre-existing condition, I met someone today who said, I'm diabetic and I'm scared to death, Tom. You're out of luck, potentially and probably. If you have substance abuse, or if you're someone thinking about having a kid, health insurance companies under this bill can say, nope, that's not covered. The opioid epidemic, you know, it's touched so many corners of America, Seth. And folks are going to lose coverage for those critical services. This is a dumpster fire. And
now,
we've got to tell the American people that. And all in service of providing a tax cut to the ultra-wealthy. I talked to a friend yesterday, the mother of two kids with special needs. They're both autistic. And Medicaid is their lifesaver. It enables them to keep their children in their neighborhood school. Without it, they may have to institutionalize their children. That's not right. Healthcare should be a right.
It feels
not a
like
privilege.
The Democratic Party can do a very good job now of saying this is what's wrong with that. And again, I understand you're against a lot of negative messaging. It didn't seem like Obamacare was expressed as a positive until this other came and told people what they were losing. Medicare for All seems to be something a lot of House Democrats are moving towards supporting. Obviously, that is a lot easier to explain than this current Republican bill, easier to explain than Obamacare. Do you see the party moving towards Medicare for All as its platform?
Well, listen, I would love to make sure that everybody had access to health care. And Medicare for All was almost enacted in 2009. And we were, frankly, one vote short of doing that. I would love, if I were king for the day, to do something akin to Medicare for All, because Medicare has been a very good program, and it's helped a lot of people. The reality right now is that the Affordable Care Act has been a lifesaver as well. And again, the irony of this, Seth, is that the Affordable Care Act, the structure of it was actually a brainchild of the Heritage Foundation, which is a conservative think tank, using market forces to provide access to health care. Why? Because Democrats like President Obama, myself, and others who wanted to be, you know, closer to a Medicare for All model, we couldn't get the votes to get that passed. And so we went with this approach, and it's been a lifesaver for so many people. And so right now, you know, while we fight for something even better, the reality right now is, you know, we have to make the case, and we are making the case. And that's why Republicans don't show up to their own town hall meetings, because they know that this bill is an unmitigated catastrophe.
So you are sort of tasked with rebuilding the Democratic Party, which, let's be honest, didn't have a great year. And do you feel like you have the hardest job in politics right now?
Well, you know, we have our moments. You know, you get 50 Democrats in a room, you might have 100 opinions. But that's kind of what I love about the Democratic Party. And I'll tell you,
I just like 50 Democrats with 50 wins would be nice.
Yes. Well, and you know, Seth, I think we have to look a little bit further than just November of 2016, because, you know, we lost 900 seats in state legislatures over the last 8 years. We had 60 senators in 2009, and now we have 48. We had the House majority, and now we don't have it, and the list goes on. And what we have to do and what we're doing is we've got to get back to basics. You know, we've got to make sure that we're building that strong party infrastructure everywhere in all 50 states and the territories, and that's exactly what we're doing. We've got to lead with our values and articulate what we stand for. We believe that health care is a right for all and not a privilege for a few. We believe that, you know, prosperity should be shared by everyone and not just by a few at the top. We've been fighting for the average person, you know, for the history of this party. And we're going to keep doing that because that's who we are as Democrats. The energy out there is unbelievable. I was in the West Coast last week.
It does strike me that you have this incredible source of energy from this sort of movement, this activist movement.
Amen.
And I do wish you the best of luck in harnessing it. I do want to ask about this because this guy, and I don't want to, again, belabor the 2016 election, but a lot of talk about superdelegates. The Democratic Party has superdelegates. The Republican Party does not. Can you make the argument that the Democratic primary process is as democratic as the Republican primary process, as long as you have something like superdelegates?
Well, that's the conversation we're having right now. We have a what we call a unity commission, which was established last year, and it's a partnership of folks who, some of whom supported Secretary Clinton, some of whom supported Senator Sanders, and we had our first meeting earlier this month. And our goal is to produce a democratic primary process and an election process that's fair and open to everyone. The superdelegate issue is one of many issues that we're discussing. And frankly, there are people who I have great respect for who are on both sides of that issue. And that's why we brought this together. It's a very open process. Anyone who wants to come and attend can do so. And people have been giving us ideas and suggestions on superdelegates, on whether primaries should be opened or closed, on how we can make sure we get our message out to everyone. Because I believe our values command you know, the support of the majority of the American people, whether it's health care or climate or good jobs or diversity and inclusion. But we've got to get out there and get that message
out.
Well,
I feel like this is the part of the movie where the Democrats just lost the big boxing match, and now we're in the training montage for the comeback fight.
Amen.
And I'm looking forward to that. But enjoy your training montage, and thank you so much for being here.
Pleasure to be with you.
Tom Perez, everybody.
Hey, everybody. This is Henry from Late Night. I am here with DNC Chair Tom Perez.
Henry, great to be with you. It's great to be with Seth tonight.
So you are the chairman of the DNC now. Can you tell us a little bit about your background, how you got to this position? I know when you were very young, you were had a very different job. You were working on garbage trucks. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, I was born in Buffalo, New York. Had the privilege of growing up there. I was 12 years old when my dad passed away, and
I had four older siblings, a mom, and a great community to help us come together. And I'm a Pell Grant kid. You know, had that opportunity as a result of Pell Grants and various jobs, including working on the back of a trash truck. You know, picked up golf balls one summer. Probably should have worn a helmet. and did whatever you could to make sure I paid my way through college and graduate school. And it taught me the dignity of work and the value of hard work and to always, whatever job you had, it's really important to respect it and to work hard and to make sure that you respect the people you work with.
So I first heard about you when you became labor secretary under President Obama. You enacted a lot of regulations that would protect workers. I wanted to get your thoughts on how regulation has become a dirty word in politics. Republicans often say job-killing regulations. How do you respond to those kind of comments?
Well, I think clean air and clean water are fundamental to our safety as a nation. I think when someone works a full-time job, they shouldn't have to live in poverty, and the Fair Labor Standards Act codified that in the 1930s. I think when you go to work in the morning, you have a fundamental right to come home safe and sound, and that's why when we put in place a worker protection for people in the construction industry, 6 million strong, who were exposed to silica dust that was killing them, or coal dust in the coal mines, they have a fundamental right to be safe. I don't call that job killing. And frankly, the employers with whom we worked understood that their workers were their most precious resource. And when they were treated fairly, that was good for workers and that was good for their bottom line. And they were always supportive of what we did, because those employers who complain that this is job killing, those are the ones who want to take that race to the bottom. And that benefits nobody other than their shareholders. And that's wrong. And so I'm proud of the work that we did. And we need to tell a very proud story of the protections that we put in place, whether it's through the EPA or the Department of Labor or the Department of Health and Human Services, because this is about really what it means to be middle class in America and what it means to be safe in America.
Right. So what has your reaction been to seeing President Trump kind of strip away some things that the Obama administration that you worked so hard on the past 8 years?
Well, it both breaks my heart and it motivates the heck out of me to make sure I do my job well as a DNC chair, to make sure we build strong parties, elect good Democrats, because you know what? When Democrats win, good things happen to good people. And when we lose, bad things happen, as we've seen with the efforts to repeal the Affordable Care Act and with the Muslim ban and the attacks on immigrants. I mean, the list is seemingly endless. And that is one of the main reasons why I ran for this job, because this is a where were you moment. And I want to be able to tell my grandchildren someday that when we had one of the most serious stress tests on our democracy, I was in the fray fighting for opportunity, making sure we were electing Democrats who could take back America.
Let me finally ask you, as someone who worked with President Obama, are there certain memories or stories that you can think back on now from your time together?
Well, I miss President Obama more and more with every passing day.
Sure, yeah.
The more I watch Donald Trump and this chaos and carnage administration that they've put forth. And, you know, it wasn't simply what Barack Obama did that I find, you know, so memorable, but it's how he did it. You know, he had an amazing grace about him. I remember a day when we were in Minnesota talking to about 15 young women. They were teenage moms. We had invested in a training program to help them punch their ticket to the middle class so that they could raise their children with dignity. And after the press had left, we were in a room size of a classroom with this group of starstruck young women looking at the President of the United States. The definition of a pretty good day. What'd you do today? I met Barack Obama. And he said something to them that really made their eyes light up, which was, remember, folks, my mother was your age when she gave birth to me. So your son or daughter may be the next president of the United States. And you could just see that light bulb go on over their head. And it was truly remarkable. And then he asked him, hey, any questions? And first question that got asked was, if you could wave a magic wand and do one thing right now, what would you do? And without missing a beat, he said, I'd pass immigration reform, comprehensive immigration reform, because I've met so many people right now whose families have been torn apart. I've met so many young dreamers who have every bit as much talent as my daughters, but simply don't have the opportunity. And it's an economic imperative. It's a moral imperative. It's who we are as a nation. And I often reflect on that moment simply because, in part, it's such a contrast to what we're experiencing now with this president.
Yeah.
And it's such a, it was really a bellwether of President Obama and who he was and what he stood for. And it's why elections matter. I mean, there's so many people at a grassroots level work their tails off to elect Barack Obama. And when we build strong parties and build strong partnerships and put our values into action, we elect good Democrats, and we make sure we have access to health care. We make sure we have access to good jobs that pay a decent wage and air and water that aren't going to kill us. All those basics. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing. It ain't easy some days, I feel like it's more important than ever.
It's really important. Thank you for doing it, and thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle @LateNightSeth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. Once Upon a Beat.